will be here. They're not. He's not.
warmer climate America is Social Security tax free. So again, it's maybe not something every senior would choose to do, but certainly I think we all know anecdotally that people do leave our state upon retirement for tax reasons. And lastly, I would just say, as we talk about, and we do talk a lot about this, both at the state capitol and at home, as we talk about workforce needs going into the future, to the extent that a senior who may want to work and stay in Minnesota and continue to work and be a productive member of our workforce society, I think we ought to encourage that instead of discouraging it from the standpoint of the Social Security taxation. So it does give an edge, if you will, or an advantage to somebody thinking about extending their work life here in Minnesota. Madam Chair, you've got some fiscal notes there that you can take a look at. This would affect about 368,000 filers, and depending on joint filing, that I'm just going to say my own estimate, that's probably at least 500,000 individuals in Minnesota that would be affected by the passage of this act. It passed, as I mentioned earlier, in Iowa in 2006 in a very bipartisan way. The vote, in fact, was 46-4 in the Senate and 89-6 in the House. It was proclaimed at that point as the crown jewel of the Iowa 2006 legislative session. And I would only hope, Madam Chair and members, that we might think a lot about this particular initiative this session, and perhaps, although there'll be perhaps many crown jewels at the end of this session, that this maybe be one of them as we think about going forward with tax policy in Minnesota. So, Madam Chair, we have some witnesses, but I want to certainly defer to Senator Rood and let her give her a chance to give her comments.
And then Senator Sinjin will come back and add your amendment before we go to the testimony and comments from the members. Senator Rood, welcome to the division.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I also have a technical amendment in mind, so I'll for later. Senate File 254 is basically the same as Senator Sinjin's, except for it's really good, honest.
I don't think that's a phone. I think that's outside the room.
Madam Chair, what this bill does is accelerates where Senator Sinjin's bill is in 10 years. This bill is in 5 years. I think at age 65, 10 years is a long way out. And the closer I get to that age, the shorter that time period seems. So this accelerates it to 5 years instead of the 10 years. I live, my district has 40% of folks are retired and on Social Security. And I live in the land of the snowbirds. And so our seniors typically leave for the winter months. And now with their Social Security being taxed and their residency in question, they are staying longer periods of time down south. And I think that our seniors, especially in my district, are a great resource. And they are great resources for our communities, our churches, and they're staying away longer because of the tax situation in Minnesota. So I'd like to see this accelerated to 5 years instead of the 10 years.
Senator Sinjin has a technical amendment. Senator Skoy moves which amendment is it? Or if you would read the amendment, Ms. Pollock.
Madam Chair and members, on Senate File 123, on line 4.34, delete percent and insert percentage points.
Is that clear? Discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Senator, for Senator Rood's bill now.
Madam Chair, it is the same amendment, same line for this bill also.
For Senate File 254. Senator Skoy moves a technical amendment to Senate File 254. Discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. I think members, that you have brought forward a very important discussion for us to have, and I do think this committee is going to be looking at the tax burden on Minnesota's senior citizen population, whether it is in the property tax area, which we've done before, and the governor has a proposal for that. We also have a proposal going forward to be sensitive to the increase that has occurred in valuation in people's homes. So we're looking at reducing the percentage that would qualify for the special property tax refund. And we're also looking at changes in our continued changes, which we have done over the past several years, in the estate tax. So there are any number of proposals coming forward. I think we want to, we also have proposals coming forward for those who are at the beginning of their lives among us, and the governor has a serious proposal about child care credits, and there's a lot of emphasis on proposals that are going to invest in early childhood education. So everything is in the mix. I think one of the things we don't want to have is grandparents in competition with their grandchildren. So we're going to try and have a balanced approach. I do think that we need to have some additional information, however, that I think might be useful to the committee. And the whole history of Social Security and how it how it has come to be taxed and et cetera, I think is important for us to know. We do pay, all of us who work, even those of us that draw Social Security benefits now, and as you know, we must draw them regardless if you're eligible by age 70 or during your 70th year. But we do pay a 6.2% tax on wages up to $118,500 for 2015, and that money does go into the Social Security trust funds. That tax, however, is only one-third of what determines our final benefits. It's only one-third. Most of us, most people, and I am a Social Security recipient, so I do include myself in that group, we receive far more than we ever pay in. Why? Because we're not the only ones that pay in. Our employers pay in as well. And what we receive is a combination of what we've paid in, what our employers paid in, and also over the years the interest that is earned by those trust funds. That's what determines benefits. And it's not their benefits are not based on the taxes we pay. It's based on our earnings, our total overall earnings. And when the federal government, and Minnesota became a conforming state to that a number of years ago, they were determining, the federal government was determining the amount of benefits that should be taxable in that second tier, they settled on 85% with the assumption that most employees pay initial taxes on 15% of the benefits that they ultimately earn. So, in other words, the maximum 85% of benefits that are subject to taxation at the federal level and in Minnesota is thought to represent, by the economists, income that has not yet been taxed, according to the Social Security Administration. So it's a little bit more complicated than saying that this is an example of double taxation. Like, for example, we know tax on tires, for example, for our cars is definitely double taxation because they're taxed at the federal level and then we tax them again at the state level on the same thing. With regard to states that don't tax Social Security, Senator Sinchin mentioned 38. Well, 9 of those states also don't have income tax, so you know immediately, you know, take a slash at them. But indeed, there are some that are income tax states that do indeed tax Social Security benefits, and the some of them do it in part, and some of them do it. In total, and there are 7 states, as you have mentioned, that do that in total. So I think it's, you know, we're looking at a big picture here. And then I think it's also important as we go forward to look at all pension issues and who is paying taxes on pensions that may represent a double taxation as well. Senator Scoy and I have been talking about maybe the whole set of pension issues and proposals ought actually to be taken up by the Pension Commission. They're the ones that look at the whole area of pension income, what employees contribute, and particularly in public employees, what they contribute, what kinds of earnings we cap so that the funds remain solvent, and so forth. A number of years ago, and I don't remember the details, but we did have, we had a pension exclusion. I think I probably was the only one here, and we had that, and it was for all pension income. Didn't matter what it was, all pension income. There was a partial exclusion for it. And we did, at that time, I think it was back in the 80s or early 90s, we got rid of the pension exclusion and instead lowered the income tax rates to in a sense, broaden the base of income that was taxable, but then lowering the rates for everyone at that income level, which then not only benefited the pensioners, but also young earners. So I think we, you know, need to keep those kinds of issues before us as we embark on trying to find the right place for and the fair place for Minnesota senior population to, you know, be engaged in income tax and maybe whether property taxes and property tax relief is a better way of targeting that group so that they can have the most use of the resources that are at their disposal. So that's a little bit of a background. This is not, it's not meant to be necessarily opposing your proposals, just making sure we have all the facts on the table and what's the best way to address the needs of the senior population. Anyone else want to say anything? Senator Dietzing?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And then we'll go to the testimony.
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair. To Senator Sinchin and Senator Rood, have you considered, I believe, I don't know if all Minneapolis, I know Minneapolis Police and Fire do not pay Social Security, and I don't know if other fire departments and police departments in the state also don't pay Social Security. So they would not benefit from this. They don't get Social Security. They just get pensions. And so have you considered the impact and looked at, if this moves forward, considering those groups that don't pay Social Security? And I don't know if others don't. I just know police and fire and certain police and fire do not.
Madam Chairman.
Senator Sinchin.
And the answer is, have we looked at it intensely, mathematically, relative to this bill? No, have certainly I casually noticed that, and sure. We do tax most pensions, I think maybe all pensions in Minnesota, except the railroad pension. So that's kind of the landscape there.
Senator Sinchin, your proposal does not deal –
No.
Does not give a similar exemption or Yeah, exemption
right.
from pension income to the federal railroad employees.
No,
is that
no,
correct?
That's not,
just,
no.
just those of us yeah. that receive Social
exactly.
Security. I'll go to but, Senator Dietzick, Senator, and then Senator Ortman, and then we'll go to the testifiers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But my follow-up is they don't pay Social Security. They don't
right.
get Social Security. So you're you know, if they gave Social Security, they paid Social Security, they would get this benefit. They don't, and so, I mean, I suppose, you know, you could look at it as two separate things, but it's also that's all they have. So if you're giving a break to one group of seniors, you're excluding this group because, you know, for whatever reason, when the system was set up, they mm-hmm. you know, were excluded from having to pay Social Security, but then they also don't get Social Security.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you. Madam Chair, on that point, the members of the police and fire are a very small minority of the population of the state of Minnesota. They do a great job. They also have a different contribution and benefit plan
right.
than those seniors that are relying on Social Security.
That's why we want to look at the whole thing.
Right. Madam Chair, if I could finish.
No,
I think it makes sense to look at the senior population and do what we can. I'm not sure that the property tax is a better way. The income tax seems to be a much better way. We've looked at the property taxes for potential relief for seniors in this committee while I've been present. I've had bills to do it. The problem with addressing it through property tax is that not all seniors own property. Secondly, the cities and the counties that rely on raising property taxes, if you relieve the seniors, that burden goes elsewhere. And so we don't want to redistribute the property tax burden to other residents to favor the seniors. They've earned these benefits. They've paid into these benefits. And I think Minnesota is not as competitive if we continue to tax these benefits. And I think we should be looking at helping our seniors, not trying to say that if you're going to help the seniors, you have to help everybody else in the state of Minnesota. That's just not a good argument here. If that were true, no bill in this tax committee providing relief to any Minnesotan could get passed.
Thank you, Senator Ortman. Again, we are going to be looking at this whole area of the tax burden that's faced by Minnesota seniors and I invite the two of you to be part of that vigorous discussion as we go.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
As we go forward, Senator Eaton, and then we do want to hear from the testifier, Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I wanted to state that as more of the population becomes seniors, which is coming up. We will end up with a considerable amount of more expenses. We're already underfunding our nursing homes and services that help keep people out of nursing homes. And this is a very expensive proposition. I don't personally think we can afford it.
Okay, let's hear from the testifiers. We have representatives from AARP, Mr. Will Phillips and Mr. Tom Counters.
Madam Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to be here today and testify. We appreciate the conversation. My name is Will Phillips, and I'm the State Director for AARP Minnesota. We represent some 650,000 Minnesotans across the state, and we are a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that helps people turn their goals and dreams into real possibilities, strengthen communities, and fights for the issues that matter most to families, such as health care, employment, and income security. And certainly we've been talking a lot about income and retirement security already today. AARP does support Senator Senjum's bill, as well as other similar bills that have been discussed here today, that would lower the tax burden for many older Minnesotans by adjusting or phasing out the tax on Social Security benefits that we currently have here in the state. For AARP, retirement security is a major priority because we know that many Minnesotans do not have adequate savings to retire. So any steps that we can take, either for current workers or for current beneficiaries, to lower the tax burden or to increase savings rates are very positive steps in our eyes. A secure retirement, we know, is out of reach for many. We see tremendous retirement savings gaps for current workers, but for current Social Security beneficiaries and seniors, we know that one out of every seven Minnesota seniors lives in poverty, and that 28% of Minnesota seniors rely solely on Social Security for their income. And while many of these seniors have incomes that are already low enough to exempt them from taxation of Social Security, increasing numbers do not. And we think that's primarily because the exemption thresholds that were set in the 80s and 90s have never been adjusted for inflation. Indeed, the 50% exemption tier was established in 1984 and the 15% tier added in 1994. And again, with these levels having never been adjusted, it means that in today's dollars, many low and middle income beneficiaries are failing to qualify.
And Mr. Phillips,
yes.
Is that fact that I think is going to be important to this committee, that since the 84 and the 85 passage, the 84 Act done under President Reagan, the changes made in the 90s done under that increased the percentage that was subject to taxation done under President Clinton, there has been no, as you, and I think you can't emphasize that enough, there has been, even though most of us don't like inflation-adjusted things, or some of us don't, this is one that has, in a sense, led to bracket creep in Minnesota on Social Security income, and that one issue is of great interest to Senator Scoy and the conversations I've had with him. So keep emphasizing that.
Well, Madam Chair, we certainly think it's important. And certainly when cost of living adjustments come out every year, when they don't come out, even though they're very – one might think they're very nominal, they're very important.
Yes.
And certainly as we see the cost of prescription drugs constantly and annually outstripping inflation, when you see ever-rising utility rates, other things like that, these seemingly small dollar amounts mean a lot.
I think that the benefit level this year went up 1.7%.
That's about
but
right.
But, of course, the costs of living on that 1.7% increase actually for exceed that. Drug prescription drugs, for example, as you just noted, certainly are higher than that, and people's living expenses, particularly if they are renters and or paying property taxes, have gone up certainly more than 1.7% for most people.
Overall, we are really interested in making sure that our population is able to remain independent and live in their homes and communities for as long as they want to and for as long as possible.
Excuse me.
Sure.
Not that was her fault.
They're not going to ring again?
She's picked it up.
It's the room's phone.
Okay, I'm sorry for the interruption.
Not a problem. So on that note, the vast majority of our members tell us that's exactly what they want to do, and we think that one way we can help them do this is by lessening their tax burden, certainly looking at these exemptions, looking at a potential phase out of these taxes is one step toward that, and we're very supportive of the effort. So we thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Mr. Counters, and then I will see if other members have questions or comments regarding your testimony. Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Tom Counters, and my wife Susan and I live in La Crescent, Minnesota. I'm here as an art volunteer today in support of Senator Senjum's bill to phase out taxes on Social Security. I grew up in Minnesota and attended the University of Minnesota, where I completed my graduate and undergraduate degrees. And my professional experience has taken me to positions in Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin. And several years ago, we returned to Iowa at that time because my wife's father had medical needs and they needed some support. He has subsequently passed away, and I entered the time when I had to look at retirement options for myself. The market, as you may remember, was not fantastic in the late 2000 to 2008, and so we kind of held back. Well, a couple of years ago, a realtor friend of ours came to us and said, I have an offer you can't refuse. And actually, he was right. So we found ourselves selling our home and looking around and saying, okay, where do we want to spend our golden years? Well, for one thing that entered in here is our son and his wife moved to the La Crescent area where he was completing a residency at Gunderson Clinic. So as many of you may know, that magical ingredient of three of our five grandchildren being in La Crescent drew us up to that beautiful area. Now, one of the things we weren't looking at when we made our decision, and you can make judgments on that if you choose, was taxation. So you can imagine our surprise when I completed that first dual state tax form after we moved up and found out that my tax obligation for my last 7 months in Iowa was zero. My tax obligation for my first 5 months in my newly adopted state was $1,500. Now, taxes on Social Security was not the only factor here, but it was a significant factor. I think, as most of you know, Wisconsin does not tax Social Security, and Iowa has just completed an 8-year phase-out program similar to Senator Senjum's bill. So when we look at situations that we're in, and my wife and I start thinking, maybe we should finish our remodeling and look at other options. We can move, being in southeast Minnesota, 5 miles to the east and have no taxes on Social Security, or we can move a little bit further south and be in Iowa again, closer to family, and also pay no taxes on Social Security. Now, a factor that enters into our decision-making process is our son, who is in his residency, has finished and is now relocated to the metropolitan area up here where he and his wife are both physicians. So that magical thing of grandchildren again, a move would not affect us that much in terms of our decision, unless, as some would suggest, we move to Minneapolis. That'd be my grandson suggesting that. But we seriously look at this, and we look at the different options that face us, and we don't want to say we're going to move for that alone. We've had a fantastic time in our short time in the Crescent. It's a wonderful community. We've met many neat friends, but financial reality always enters in. Finally, I come to you today also as an ARF volunteer, and with my wife, we're very involved in the fraud network presentations throughout Minnesota. I also am a volunteer for the Senior Linkage Line and do Medicare counseling with seniors as well. In our work with these seniors, many things come up. First of all, as has been mentioned, we have a fantastic resource with our seniors. And the fact that they can contribute to not only our economy, but to the services and the volunteer services we need is fantastic. Anything that detracts or takes away from that is not a good thing. I also, in doing presentations and in counseling with seniors, find many who are struggling with just the basic getting by from day to day. Now, as was mentioned earlier, very true, the increased medical costs in insurance and prescription drugs more than eats up the 1.7% or whatever comes in the increase in Social Security benefits. Additionally, doing counseling with people planning for retirement, I find many of them looking at the issue of taxation. You've talked about all the different things, so I'm not going to say anything further, other than taxation is a factor that enters their decision-making process. I would just like to not have taxes on Social Security be a significant factor when I'm talking to them about decisions they're making for retirement. In conclusion, I want to thank you, Madam Chair, and the committee for an opportunity to testify before you today. I encourage your support for Senator Senjum's bill, for bills that look at ways to enhance the life of seniors. And I wish you the best, because I know dealing with taxation is a big and complex issue, and there are no simple decisions or nor simple solutions. For seniors, though, they have to look every day as they're looking and preparing for the rest of their life at how that's going to affect them. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Counters. Any comments from Mr. Counters or questions? Senator Dietzick.
Thank you. Thank you for your helping to counsel other seniors. I think that is important. I have a lot of low-income seniors in my area who, quite frankly, can't afford or couldn't decide to move, so that's, you know, not an option for them. But one of the things you said that was made me kind of curious was you had, and I don't want to get, you know, too much into your personal finance or anything, but you said you had, you know, no taxes in Iowa, and then you come here and you had some taxes in Minnesota, and some of it was Social Security taxes and other stuff. Does Iowa have other stuff, or how do you have no taxes in Iowa?
Well, Iowa had, you know, and again, I will...
Mr. Counters.
I will not be the accountant here, because through the magic of TurboTax, my tax is prepared. So I know some of the things, but not all of them. One of them is we do invest in 529 plans for our grandchildren's college education. That is a tax exemption in Iowa for state tax. It is not in Minnesota. And there were some other areas that this also... Iowa also has had a phase out of reduction or phase out in taxation on pension plans, other pension plans, and that Social Security and our pension plans are our main sources, 90% plus of our income. So I think I'm assuming the pension plan one as well as the 529.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Counters. That's really. Interesting information, not necessarily just for the comparison, but there are proposals coming forward that we're going to be hearing as well down the line about having a tax-exempt college savings plans that grandparents and parents can contribute to. So we'll have to take a look at what Iowa does in that regard. And we appreciate you bringing that up. No further testimony. Again, we are going to be looking into this area very seriously, Senator Senge. We don't know what will be the outcome, but I'll call in just a moment. we're very interested in it, we're going to, see what we can do to have respect the contributions of seniors, but also looking at what are the good arguments for doing this and understanding all the facts, and that this is not necessarily just double taxation of income. It's income that has a lot of it that has not been taxed because the recipients did not pay. They paid only half into the system, and most of us, once we start receiving Social Security, receive far more than what we ever paid in. Although you can start doing interest assumptions too, and saying, "Well, if you could take that money and invest it on your own, maybe you could have made more." Who knows? We'll look at all of those things, but we're going to pay attention to the inflation. The inflation set of facts. I think that's important. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to thank Senator Senjum and Senator Rood for bringing these bills forward. These are really good proposals that should be given very serious consideration by this committee. I've heard that the fiscal note is extensive and that it's an awful lot of money. Well, I agree. It's a lot of money if you're talking about $90 million, especially from the Ortman perspective. One person thinks $90 million is a lot. But I want to put that $90 million in perspective. The fiscal note for Senator Rood's bill estimates a revenue impact of about $83 million in the next biennium. Well, the governor has proposed about $90 million for new early childhood programs that include unfunded mandates to our local governments. He's proposed $90 million in child care tax credits in the next biennium. So I want to point out the fact that we have some choices to make. We get to set the priorities in this committee. I hope that providing some relief for the overall tax liability of our seniors is considered in the mix. I think it's as important as any of these other proposals.
Well, thank you, Senator Ortman, for supporting our going forward with looking at this thing. We need to lay over your bills. So Senator Ortman then moves to lay over Senate File 123 as amended. All those in favor of that motion for further inclusion and consideration in the omnibus bill. All those in favor.
Madam Chair, before the vote, can I ask, did your motion include both bills?
Well, we're going to have separate motions.
All right. Thank you. That's what I wanted to know.
So, first of all, Senate File 123 as amended. All those in favor, please say aye, laying it over.
Aye.
Motion prevails. And then we have Senate File 124. Senator Ortman, I'll call on you to make all these motions. Mm-hmm. Senator Ortman moves that Senate File 124. Was that one amended?
No, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, I think 124 is also mine. Senator Rood's, I'm not sure what that number is.
Laid over for further consideration. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Ortman moves that Senate File 254 as amended be laid over. Senator Rood, be laid over for further consideration for the omnibus tax bill. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. Since Senator Limmer is not here, but his bill was identical to.
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer's file 256 is identical to Senator Senjum's 123, and it would need the technical oral amendment if
let's,
the committee
let's
wishes.
Let's go ahead and do that so we have all of them and everybody's okay. Senator Ortman moves the technical amendment with regard to changing percent to.
Percentage points, Madam Chair.
Percentage points. All in favor of that technical amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Senator Ortman moves that Senate File 256, as amended, be laid over for further consideration in the omnibus tax bill. On that motion, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Senjum, Senator Rood, and gentlemen, for your testimony, and we hope to have more discussion with you.
Madam Chair, can I just say that I thank you. This is, in my view, the start of a legislative journey into this topic, and the welfare of senior citizens in perhaps even a more total way, but appreciate your reception and your hospitality this morning. It's good to move this along.
Senator Senjum, I appreciate your concern for this
you
senior
and
citizen and that one there.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Escoy. As the only two seniors here, you see, we kind of speak the same language. Go ahead, Senator Escoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Senjum, would you have an opinion on whether we would kind of send this over to the Pension Committee for them to take a little look at it and then bring it back? I mean, just to get their opinion? Know what you'd think about that. We, you know, it's nice to have the author make the request if there was going to be a bill moving that way, unless the chair of the pension committee would request it. I don't know exactly. The process would be easier if you would request it.
Request it at this point?
Well, no,
floor. Or just through the normal system?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Senator Scott.
Well, why don't we visit about it afterwards?
Okay.
But that would be something we might want to think about.
Right now, the bill is staying in the division.
Right, staying here.
Okay, but we can talk about whether there's another path that is more expansive to this whole issue.
Well, and Madam Chair, Senator Senjum, it's not just this bill. I'm kind of thinking about it and refer to some of the other pension tax relief proposals that are in the tax committee's jurisdiction. Not that I'm trying to not have them come back here in the end, but just to have a little more input from a committee whose area of expertise is the pensions and see what their thoughts are on it. And that, it's something that Senator Rest and I have talked about.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I'd be happy to talk to
either
one of you.
Thank you very much, Senator Senjum.
Thank you.
The next item on our agenda are two bills dealing with income tax credits for veterans. I'll invite Senator Weaver and Senator Nelson to come forward together. We'll proceed in the same way. They will each present their bills, and then we will have testimony. Before we do that, however, members have in their packets the minutes from the Thursday, January 15th, 2015.
Thank you.
Hearing of the division. Any comment on the minutes? Seeing none. Senator Thompson moves adoption of the minutes from Thursday, January 15th. Discussion. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails, and the minutes are adopted. Senator Weaver, you have the lower number. Why don't we begin with your bill, and then Senator Nelson, you can explain how your bill is similar, same, or different. Senator Weaver, welcome back to the division, and we appreciate your interest and Senator Nelson's interest in the lives of our veterans. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and committee members, and for allowing us to jointly present and for our testifiers as well. Senate File 79 provides a Veterans Job Tax Credit, and it's in response to the unacceptably high level of unemployment for our veterans. Many of those veterans who have served, fought for our country, and now they're fighting for a job. It provides hope. It provides incentives. And as it will be clear in testimony, there is a very strong need to address this. Overall, Senate File 79 provides a tax credit three ways for Minnesota employers. A tax credit of up to $3,000 or 10% of wages for hiring a vet who is disabled. The second tier would be for hiring a vet who is currently unemployed, with some documentation as noted. Or the third level would be for hiring a vet, and that would be up to $500 or that 10% threshold. So overall, that's the bill. It had been before you in another session. The need remains to be before us and the challenge, and I offer Senate File 79 for your consideration, and we have many of the same testifiers that will address the need and why it's needed right now in our state. Now, yield to Senator Nelson.
Senator Weaver, I note from our information that this is not a first time around for you on this proposal. You have offered it before, and for whatever reason, the Department of Revenue's estimate on its cost has decreased by some $8 million. So I think the committee that we've heard this bill before needs to keep that in mind as we consider it. I wonder if you could give just a little bit more information, and maybe together with Senator Nelson, about other veterans' preference laws that we have currently in Minnesota. What is it we do now to help veterans either to reintegrate if they are coming off of an active duty deployment, or veterans who have retired separate from the ones who are actively seeking employment? What, if any, statutory or policy have we already established to reach out to veterans, and then how would this fit in? And if you keep those questions in mind, maybe Senator Nelson, you could just explain the difference in your bill, and then we'll go back to those. But I really would like for you to talk about the whole, not just this proposal in isolation, but the whole thing, and I see your testifiers are eager to come forward. Maybe they can give us that information, too, if you don't have all the details. Oh. Senator Nelson, would you just explain your bill briefly, and then we'll go to that discussion.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair, for hearing Senate File 199, Veterans Job Tax Credit Bill. And if I could just add a couple things to Senator Wieger's testimony. It was not that long ago that we recall those devastating headlines that said that veterans were filling up our unemployment ranks. And we cannot stand for that as Minnesotans. And fortunately, we have seen some reduction in that. Currently, about 5.2% of veterans are unemployed. However, that is significantly higher than our state's unemployment rate overall.
And those are veterans who are not receiving pensions?
Yes.
I mean, they're actively seeking employment. They're not retired as such.
Yes,
do you know what I mean?
That's a great clarification. It's called in veterans who are in the labor force. That means they're of that age where they would be looking for jobs. Currently, it's at 5.2%, which is still statistically higher than our state unemployment rate in general. And perhaps
which is?
I think
3.6%.
Yeah, 3.6%. We should talk about that. That's a good thing. We want our we want our veterans to enjoy that unemployment rate as well, which is really why I've brought this bill today. I also would add that you noticed that the fiscal note from when Senator Wieger first brought the bill has reduced somewhat. And part of that could be because instead of having 11% unemployment rate for our veterans, now we're down to 5.2%.
Good point. Thanks
but I also want to add that that does not reduce the imperative of the bill, my bill and Senator Wieger's bill that's before you today. The feds have had a similar veterans job credit bill, but it has expired. And so the need on Minnesota is greater. And one could say that perhaps the federal bill has worked and helped us bring down that unacceptably high veterans unemployment rate. But that is no longer there. So all the more impetus on Minnesota. Madam Chair and committee, I would like to thank my co-sponsors as well. It's a very bipartisan bill, of course. Senator Dietzick, I appreciate her co-sponsorship as well, Senator Anderson, Senator Kiffmeyer, and Senator Saxhog. So, and I appreciate the committee hearing this. My bill is very similar to Senator Wieger's. There is one difference, and that is the third option. So the three unemployment credits we have for unemployed vet, disabled vet, the third one's a little bit different, although I don't know how it's different in language, it might not be much in effect. And that is that my legislation calls for that a third credit, which is a $500 non-refundable tax credit to the qualified employer who employs a qualified employee, would be for what we call our 9/11 vets. Those are the vets whose service started after 9/11, 2011. Other than that, the bill is very significant, is significantly the same, although I have to say I've not read all of Senator Wieger's bill, but I did look at the Senate Council research, and that is the only difference that I could see in that. And Madam Chair, I know our testifiers are anxious to come, and I'd like to call them up if there's no more questions, or if there are any, I'm certainly open to answer those. I will say three things before I leave the mic here. And your question was I so appreciate your question for the overall, what are we doing for our vets in general? There are a couple of things our vets themselves will tell you more, but let me just mention the vets linkage line, which is kind of like that one-stop shop. We also have Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and those two things are in process and working well. There's one other thing that maybe I'll just use this public opportunity to say that is not working as well, and we've talked about this 3 years ago in the Education Committee. We talked about it in the Jobs Committee, and that is aligning the military service record, the MOS, as our veterans come out, and helping our higher education institutions give prior credit experience, for those skills that our veterans have learned in their military service and performed exceptionally. Med techs come to mind as a very top-of-the-mind one. And I asked in higher ed yesterday how the University of Minnesota was doing on aligning these. And the reason I asked is because the veterans in my district have told me it's not been working. So they're not able to take their military service record, MOS, and align it with our higher education institutions. They've not seen success doing that. So that was the genesis of my question yesterday in higher education with the University of Minnesota.
Sounds like something that, given all the controversy in the MNSCU system right now over issues like this, that transferring of credits and content of courses, et cetera, that Chancellor Rosenstone and the faculty members ought to be taking up very seriously as well. I hope they are, quite frankly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the opportunity to bring it to the public
again.
Thank
you for doing that.
That was a question in higher ed, and the answer was a little
weak,
and I think your committee members in higher ed would say that as well. So thank you for the opportunity to encourage that.
Senator Skoy, before we move on,
thank you.
And then, Senator Weaker, I'll come back to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Nelson, I don't know if you're leaving the table or not, but my question is about the 9/11 veteran difference and why we would want to not include veterans from the first Gulf War but include veterans from the second Gulf War. I mean, I'm trying to figure out the distinction there as we, as we move forward with this, why would we want to make that distinction?
Well, the 9/11 veterans came back at a time, Senator Skoy, and are coming back at a time when we've had significant we've had the crisis of 2006 and 8. So the employment market has been very weak as those particular veterans come back. My bill, again, just to reiterate, has the tax credit for unemployed veterans, for disabled veterans, and then for the 9/11 veterans who have served in combat zones. So maybe I need to clarify that. Mm-hmm. So it's also serving in the combat zone where actually the unemployment rate is significantly higher. That's 29%.
Exactly.
So it's significantly higher unemployment rate.
Isn't it something like three times the number 9/11 vets unemployment rate relative to the veterans' unemployment rate, period. I mean, it's a really much larger group of veterans, which is why your bill gives a focus to them, as I understand it.
Madam
is that Chair, correct?
That's correct. It's a staggeringly higher number as far as unemployment, as far as vets, and then the time that they're coming back and the weakness of our economy at that time.
Senator Weaker, some additional comments before we go to the testifier.
Yes, Madam Chair, briefly, the difference in the bills would be on the 9/11 qualification for that third tier.
Also, I think your bill has a two-year veteran unemployment period, and Senator Nelson's is a one-year employment.
And I'm very aware of the unique the statistics, the problems, having a daughter that served in Iraq, and knowing many of her friends and some of them that didn't return. But I think, as Senator Skoy alluded, there's other hurt that's out there as well, and they deserve to provide that, and I believe our testifiers will underscore why we shouldn't make that, need not make that distinction. So, Madam Chair, I could comment further on some of the other programs, but we have witnesses that could do that.
And Madam Chair, I do want the witnesses to do that, but I do need to make one minor point of clarification.
Sure.
And that is
Senator
that,
Nelson.
My bill calls for the same tax credit, but for it's an unemployed veteran. So maybe I better clarify those three areas because they are overlapping, and I want to make sure the committee understands that. So the first tax credit, 10% of wages up to a cap of $3,000, is for a disabled veteran.
Yes.
Just like Senator Weaker's. Second one is 10% of the wages paid up to a cap of $1,500, and that's for an unemployed veteran. So that gets to Senator Skoy's point about all veterans. And then the third piece is the same 10% cap of $500 for that 9/11 veteran. Yeah. So we're not leaving any veterans out.
So with the second,
who are unemployed.
The second and third categories, are they stackable then? So oh. it's oh. they get one and then they get the 9/11 one too. And I do understand that both bills are very careful. It's not that someone can hire somebody and then fire them and then rehire them and they get the credit. We're not allowing that. But would
Madam
you respond
Chair,
to that?
Wonderful question. They are not stackable.
Thank you.
None of
just to get that
stackable.
On the record.
Yes.
Yep. Any other questions or comments for the authors before we go to the testimony?
So if you're unemployed, you take this one. If you're
Senator Scoy,
employed.
Did you have a point?
I'm understanding it.
Madam Chair,
Senator
Council
Ortman.
Was going to give a little further clarification of that, and I think it would benefit me, maybe others.
Sure. Thank you, Senator Ortman. Ms. Pollack, before we move on.
Madam Chair and Senator Ortman, to the question of whether the credits are stackable, only one of the three credits may be taken, but, for example, if a veteran qualified as disabled and unemployed, the employer could take the larger credit up to $3,000, but not for the combination of both credit amounts.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification. Senator Ortman?
Then how does that third category fit in with those two?
Madam Pollack. Chair and Senator Ortman, in the same way. So it's possible that a disabled veteran may not qualify as a 9/11 veteran, but would qualify as disabled and then would therefore be eligible for the disabled veteran credit.
Okay, thank you.
But if they only fall into that third category, they can take that third category, the $500 one.
Correct.
And and it is important in terms of the tax committee that it is a non-refundable credit so that it's available only to the extent that it reduces the taxpayer's tax liability to zero. It is not refundable so that there's not a check that's sent back to the employer. It's not that kind of credit. We do have some of those credits, but these proposals are not one of them. Senator Ortman.
Madam Chair, I think that is a great point because I have been hoping that we would look at the credits that are refundable. And if there were one that were a good candidate for a refundable nature, I would think it would
be this
one, as opposed to perhaps the research and development credit that's going to investors. I mean, there's real need here, and if we were going to have that conversation, I would welcome it. Which credits are refundable and why?
Good point, but we want to note that the revenue estimate is based on it being non-refundable. So in the both the proposals that have come forward. Before we move to the testimony, I just want to point out that the document that you had in your folders, Taxation of Social Security Benefits, came from Senator Senjum. It was unidentified, and we do not allow that in the committee, but his name should have been on it, and we'll just note that for the record. This document comes from Senator Senjum. So, gentlemen, welcome to the committee, and we're pleased to have your testimony. Who would like to begin?
My name is Dennis Davis, Madam Chair.
Mr. Davis, please proceed.
Members of the committee, Madam Chair, thank you for the time and the opportunity to speak with you today. My background, I have 16 years of military service. I've served both active duty Navy and Air Force Reserve. Never thought I'd be back in, and a little thing called 9/11 happened. Re-enlisted and then earned a commission. I've deployed twice in support of Operations Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom. The first time I deployed was to the Dover-Port Mortuary as a brand-new second lieutenant. Saw almost 300 casualties in just under 90 days there. Certainly the most difficult thing I've ever done in my life. Also the most rewarding, but it is something that I'll have with me for the rest of my life. Also deployed on short notice to Afghanistan for 5 months, 3 weeks notice. I said goodbye to my family and was gone in 2010, 2011. So I understand this tax credit in this bill, from a military side, but also from an employer's side. In the private sector, I have spent over 15 years in hiring and in HR capacities. I own a consulting firm that helps companies create sustainable, replicatable processes to hire veterans. I've seen hundreds of thousands of resumes. I've done thousands of interviews, hundreds of hires. I understand and speak corporate HR and what it takes to get hired in an organization. I've deployed twice, as I said, and I've been on and off active orders no less than four times during that period. So I understand the impact it has on employers as well. And this tax credit would help attract veterans to those employers and give them an incentive, an additional incentive to hire them. So that's a little bit about my background. We talked a little bit about the unemployment rates of veterans. And for the most recent data that I had, our post 9/11, I think it's important to consider our post 9/11 veterans are at 8.8%. That was a little over a year ago, that data was that we had. But 8.8%, so that's nearly three times the current state rate for unemployment.
Is that unemployment of veterans, that special group? I think that is that part of the veterans' unemployment, or is that relative to the state's unemployment? Do you understand
Minnesota,
what I mean?
Yes, it's Minnesota state. Post 9/11 veterans were at 8.8%. as compared to the current state at 3.7% for all people.
What about for all veterans?
For all veterans, we were still at 5%.
Are veterans other than 9/11?
Yeah, the all veterans, 5%.
5%.
Yeah,
so
what we had discussed earlier.
It's, again, one-third higher than for veterans otherwise. And Senator Nelson went into that. These folks are coming back during the recession and find it even harder to recover from that relative to other people who were in the labor force and trying to find jobs. Correct? Is that got that right?
Absolutely it is. And thank you for the question, Madam Chair.
Please continue.
You know, when they come back, and I've heard the argument for post 9/11 that many of them are going to college, and that's true. But does anybody know one of the highest unemployed populations in this country?
College graduates.
New college graduates. So you're going to take a 22-year-old with 4 years of military experience that can't translate that into the private sector very easily, and with a private sector that doesn't understand the experience that we bring as veterans, and they're worried about all kinds of things that I'll get to in my testimony. But then they join at 26. They join the ranks of the new college grad, and so they look like an old college grad that wasn't very motivated to get through college and doesn't have work experience, because they show up and they say, oh, you're here to get your first real job. Well, what was the 4 years that I had in the military and the two or three deployments overseas under fire? That is real world. That happens every single day in this state and every single day across the country. HR means well, but they don't speak the same language, because very few of them are veterans, yet they are the ones controlling the hiring process. So I wanted to make that distinction, that we have to care for all veterans and the post 9/11 veterans. But if you hear that, well, they just went to college and that's why their unemployment rate is higher, agreed, but then we're just simply kicking the can down the road, and we don't want to do that, because they are going to have difficulties finding work when they graduate from college, and that bears out in statistics across the country. Why this is important: we have all kinds of stereotypes for veterans when we're looking at hiring in the private sector. They look at us as broken, needing to be fixed. My consulting work, every single potential client I talk to, PTSD comes up. And they think, because we served, because we wore a uniform, we deployed, we must be broken, we must need to be fixed, there must be something wrong with us, and that the military causes post-traumatic stress, and so we're not interested in hiring you. That's the way the media portrays it. And those simply, for the most part, just aren't true stereotypes. So this bill, or these bills, whichever form or merged, ends up passing, hopefully, would help alleviate some of that and be able to add additional value to that employer to say, I need to take a deeper look at these veterans to be able to hire them. I want to do an interactive exercise with you, and I promise it'll be painless. If you have a pen and paper, I want you to draw a stool with three legs, and we're going to label them really quick. Some pins I see moving, but
maybe
not all.
Maybe I'll do it virtually.
Okay. One would be unemployment or unemployment. One would be PTSD. and one would be suicide. And when we're talking about the veteran employment or unemployment situation, all three of these tie together. And that's something that most of us are not looking at in the government, in the private sector, and in hiring. Our national suicide rate for veterans currently is 22 a day, 22 veterans a day, and that's understated. That's more than 8,000 in a year committing suicide, more than 1,200 in a year than we've lost in combat in Iraq and Afghanistan combined. So when veterans come back, they have difficulty finding employment. Whether they have PTSD or not, oftentimes the employer just assumes, wrongfully, well, they must have something wrong with them. And then they can't find work, and they begin this downward spiral that's very difficult to get out of. We see that in elevated veteran court cases. We see it with substance abuse. We see it with suicide. In our own state of Minnesota, 2005 to 11, the statistics that I found, 27.7 per 100,000 was the average suicide rate. In 2011, it was 31. During that same time, 2005 to 2011, it was 13.3%. So disproportionately high. We are 7% of the population as veterans, and yet we're more than twice as many suicides coming from that population. So this tax credit not only can help them find work, but this may literally save people's lives because it's going to continue them on a path, ease that transition back into the private sector where they can find meaningful work again.
You know, Mr. Davis, one of the the kind of horrifying thoughts that comes, I think, to me is that one of the things that a soldier who is about to be deployed must have going through his mind or her mind is, when I go on this deployment, I have just increased the likelihood that I won't have a job when I get back. And that's what you're telling us.
It is, and that makes
To think that in going to put yourself in harm's way for your country and for all of us, and we thank all of you here who have done that or are about to do that. And yet, one of the things, it's not just taking care of your family and making sure that they're supported back here and so on. It's like, when I come back, I'm going to have a hard time finding a job. That's the statistic. That's wrong. That should not happen.
I agree, Madam Chair, and this is a way for us to be able to help with that in a very small way, but a very meaningful and very relevant way. I can't say that it's caused, the suicide is caused by the unemployment, but certainly it's correlated. The statistics don't lie. We have an elevated unemployment rate for veterans in this state, and we have, dating back to 2011, when it was 22.9% for post-9/11 veterans. That's just wrong. That we bring more value than that to the workforce.
These bills are not just for reaching out to veterans who are currently unemployed. It's actually for all veterans that are not in the unemployment ranks, too. Just want to keep that in front of us as well.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
So this is should not be a bipartisan issue. This should be a nonpartisan issue. Everybody, regardless of what side of the aisle, left, right, middle, center, wherever, should be able to stand up and say this is something that we should take a strong look at. On a fiscal note, I know what can and can't be considered in this, but when you take a person off of the unemployment payrolls and give them a job, or they get a job, then they are paying taxes at a higher level than they are taking money out of the government. So ultimately, if we can lower this rate and lower the suicide rate and have more productive employees in the workforce, the tax revenue is actually going to go up. And again, I know how the formula works, so we can't consider that. But this really should be revenue neutral. And if it works right, it actually should make a little bit of revenue on it, which is a good thing because we've got productive members of society. The last thing that I would comment on is the post-9/11 piece and perhaps the opportunity if we wanted to include something for specifically post-9/11, that maybe there's a middle category of, say, $750 where we could include that so they are recognized and that contribution is recognized. That suicide rate that I mentioned earlier, 2/3 of those are 50 or older. So we have people that come back and transition and have difficulty and get to the age of 50 or older and then commit suicide. So I think recognizing all veterans, which we do in the top two tiers, but that bottom tier, whether it's a post 9/11 veteran or any veteran, if they're already employed and we're moving them from one job to another job, and that employer's getting a tax credit, that's creating a job opening there. So why penalize the employer for hiring a non-post 9/11 veteran and they don't get the tax credit? Let's give them the tax credit, and if we want to incentivize even more to hire a post 9/11 veteran, then let's add to the legislation or as they would merge, however that would happen, to be able to recognize a little bit more that post 9/11, the fiscal impact would be negligible, I believe, but that could then differentiate and then solve that issue. So you recognize both.
Well, again, the credits and the proposals are not stackable. They're options. But thank you for your testimony. Any questions for Mr. Davis? Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Davis, it's good to hear your testimony. As we work to try to break this cycle that you're talking about, one of the things that come to mind is we look at what goes on in other areas in the legislature and trying to do the same work and try to achieve the same goal. Have you thought about what is the most effective mechanism that we would use to break that cycle? Is the tax credit the best way to do that? Would there be other areas that we should be looking at, mental health initiatives, job training initiatives for these folks that could get in there and target at breaking that cycle, you know, in conjunction with or outside of this tax credit proposal? And it's one of the things we struggle with as a tax committee. You know, we talked to the pension about sending some of the other proposals to the pension commission just to see how they interact with what's going on in other areas of the state. So do you have any thoughts about that?
Mr. Davis.
Madam Chair, Senator. Yes, I do. And I think this is one tool on the belt. This is a really good start. I actually was the one that worked with the revisor's office 2 years ago and wrote this legislation with the revisor's office because of my background, and it was modeled on the federal piece. Anything we can do on the mental health piece, I think, is valuable. I've talked with Representative Scott. I happen to go to church with her and she was directing me to somebody potentially where we could work on some sort of mental health legislation this term. I don't know what that would look like yet or the cost of it, but I think being able to have that would be important if we can do something there. The reason I think this is important is because I have PTSD. I saw almost 300 people come through casualties at the mortuary. That forever impacts me. But one of the things that keeps me going is the fact that I can be here helping, that I have a purpose, I have a cause, I have a job, and you don't go on that downward spiral. And you see that with non-veterans as well. Unemployed tend to be more depressed, elevated suicide rates, so that's not uncommon. So that, I think this is a key component, but we could be on a parallel track in this same session on some sort of mental health, providing for some additional resources to be able to do that. So I hope that answers your question, Senator.
We'll move on then. Sir, if you'd identify yourself for the record, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. Thank you for having us. I'm Bishop Dan Williams. I'm the 4th District Commander of the American Legion Department of Minnesota. And the great state of Minnesota has been a national leader in veterans affairs in several areas, certainly not the least of which being beyond the Yellow Ribbon, the Yellow Ribbon identifiable cities, the stand downs. These things are tremendous. These bills are another great step in supporting those who served, protect our nation. Today's veterans are serving in an all-volunteer capacity. I served during the time of Vietnam when there was still a draft. I'm proud to have served. Many of today's veterans have served multiple deployment tours. With the anticipated drawdown, we will receive more service members transitioning into a veteran status than before. Some of these will be transitioning into that status for the first time. Some have been called up and reactivated, so they will be transitioning back to a veteran status. We believe that you join with us, and I'm glad to hear your comments, Madam Chair, in appreciating the service of each of our veterans. These bills are tangible ways of sending a clear message to all of our veterans that we care. The passage of these bills will allow employers to also take part and make a clear, bold statement to our veterans. That statement, simply put, is, quote, "Dear veteran, we, the employers within the state of Minnesota, appreciate your service. We also appreciate the skills and expertise you have developed and honed while serving our nation. Now, work with us and apply those skills to make Minnesota and make the Minnesota employment climate better for you, our veterans," end quote. Passage of these bills will allow employers to leverage some of the training given to our best and brightest, some of whom are returning to us with service-connected disabilities. However, that does not diminish the skills and expertise developed and honed while serving our state and our nation. Please assist Minnesota employers in putting more of our veterans to work. We urge your support of these bills. And before I conclude my remarks, I'd like to say, as I sit here, I guess I would be what you would consider a combo platter. I'm a Vietnam era veteran. I'm 50% service connected with my ankles and my shoulders. However, March will be 2 years ago, I had a fall and sustained a traumatic brain injury, the reason for my glasses and earplugs. At just over 60 years old, when I complete an inpatient pain training just about a month, I will again be a disabled veteran, service-connected, unemployed, looking at becoming gainfully employed. So I can imagine, as I sit with an employer, and they're looking at, well, you know, what do you have to offer, and you're just a few years from retirement. Well, I have a lot. Some of the things that were developed in the military, but some of the things over, you know, 40 years in industry bring to the table. Some of these veterans that are coming back had to shut down their companies so they could serve. And they're not coming back to an employer, but they're coming back to a business that's closed. And if they've been running that business for 15, 20 years, now they're in the workforce. So this bill will provide an incentive. I would like to share our oldest son is an Iraqi Freedom, Enduring Freedom veteran. When he returned to Fort Bragg at the time that the suicides were taking place there, he did seek employment after he got out in the Fayetteville area. He ended up relocating back to the D.C. area. He had also served in the Marines prior to serving in the Army and sought employment. Later, the Marine Corps hired him as a civilian employee. And then finally, he ended up working for the State Department. And that's a good story, but that is not the typical story. As my colleague mentioned, there are a number of employers, uninformed, will paint some veterans with a huge stigma. So this is a step, and this is not a cure-all. This is a step that your question, Madam Chair, the response to that would be yes, and. There are many more things to do. Fortunately, the Department of Veteran Affairs at the federal level, they are investing more right here in the Twin Cities in the area of mental and behavioral health to allow veterans to become productive members in society. And so with that, Madam Chair, committee members, I thank you for your time and your consideration and urge the passage of these bills. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. William. Comments or questions for Mr. William? Seeing none, we'll move on. Sir, if you would identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Ralph Donay. I'm the chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council. I want to thank you, Madam Chair, and committee members for allowing me to be here this morning. I think all of you here have seen me many times down here at the Capitol in the last 12 or 13 years. I come down here to help attempt to be a voice for the veterans that we don't crowd into these committee meetings so that we can let you know what's going on out there in the world for in our veterans community. The first thing I'd like to bring up is last year, thanks to Senator Saxhog, we have a bill that was passed that says that the state certifies veteran-owned businesses. That opens the door for many veterans who are coming back to start a business. This bill would aid those folks in finding more people to work in their newly established companies. Mortensen, who's building the Viking Stadium, has pledged 10% of the bids to veteran-owned businesses. That's $100 million that could be going to help veterans in our state. The problem in the past was certifying what was a veteran-owned business. The VA's process was so bogged down, it could take anywhere from 16 to 18 months to get that certification back. The UVLC, along with Mortensen, Mr. Mortensen is a Navy veteran, and his son is also a Navy veteran, and that was one of the reasons with the handshake they said, we want veterans to be involved in building the Viking Stadium. So the companies who are currently at work are looking for veterans. This would help entice them to hire more veterans. When you have a business, what's the bottom line? How much money you can make. So if we can take a young company and say, if you hire these veterans, we're going to give you a little bit of an advantage. We're going to put some more money back in your baseline for your business. I think that is a win-win situation for the veterans community. The other thing I just wanted to point out quickly, there's some more people that wish to come up, is that Mr. Davis mentioned the self-worth, having a job, paying taxes. That's all part of what veterans lose when they leave the state and come back. Personally, I was gone for 30 years and came back. The state that I left didn't exist anymore when I came back. My little hometown of Elk River isn't what I left. I don't know 99% of the people in town anymore because they all moved in there while I was gone. So it's important to do everything that we can for our veterans when they come back to the state. We have many guard folks, as you've heard over and over and over the last few years down here, that are taken away from their families, away from their jobs, away from their employers, away from their businesses. This can be another thing that we can do to make Minnesota more veteran-friendly. Thank you for your time.
Questions for Mr. Donay? Thank you, sir. We'll move on. If you'd identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Chairman and members. My name is Jerry Kaiser.
Mr. Kaiser.
I'm the Vice Chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council, and I work with Ralph over these last years. But I'm also the representative for the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Equity Program. That means that women, minorities, and veterans are supposed to be hired in a particular manner in tune to that that stadium. That also includes other things that are becoming forth, because it's a Minnesota money into it, $400 million. The same with Rochester and other entities are out there. There's an equity program for all those. Unfortunately, the percentages of veterans being hired in that is not to the same level as the women and minorities because of the difficulty them getting a process of being certified as a veteran. And that's another bill that it was passed and is being funded. But what this would be is a caveat to that, would encourage these companies to hire veterans. Either I am a combat disabled Vietnam veteran. I served two tours over there, and I volunteered twice. I was a combat aviator and a crewman. And when I came back, there wasn't anything, nothing. There wasn't any programs. There were a few, but I didn't find any of them. And the affliction that Vietnam veterans came forth with is good, because that affliction really helped these young men and women coming back now, because our motto in my organization, Minnesota Vietnam Veterans Charity, is that never again will one group of veterans abandon another. And this is another way for you to help these young men and women coming back. I've met many of them. I have to shepherd them. I don't want them going through the same stuff that I did, and I shepherd them down to the VA to get them straightened out. This would really mean a big thing. As a small business owner, I run a nonprofit. I don't have any employees because it's a single entity situation. But my friends and colleagues who are veterans, it would be great for them to have this as an extra thing for them to have that tax deduction to hire more veterans. And these other men and women who've talked here today really have said the story. It's my profession that this is just another thing that would make Minnesota more veteran-friendly. And that's what the governor wants to do. That's what the federal people want to do. We want to be able to have us be proudly being able to serve our veterans. And that unemployment rate for these new guys coming back and gals is an abomination. I don't even know what the percentage was for us as Vietnam veterans coming back. But be that as it may, that doesn't mean anything. We're able to circumvent that situation and change it, and you guys, you can help us do that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kaiser. I have a question for Senator Wieger and Senator Nelson. These proposals deal only with giving an income tax credit, which then assumes that the employers are subject to the income tax. Have you given thought to how you could develop an incentive for that would allow nonprofit, as you just mentioned, not-for-profit, tax-exempt organizations that are not part of the tax code, do not pay corporate income taxes or individual income taxes on their business enterprise, how could they be part of a program to hire veterans?
Madam Chair.
Senator Nelson.
I think that is a great question, and I've wrestled with that not only with this bill, with other bills as well, historic preservation, for example. I don't have a good answer. Maybe that's something that we could discuss with this committee, but I would say that credit is one of those tools that is in our toolbox that's available, and you're right, it's not the end-all solution, but it is a step with the tool that we have now. But I'm certainly open to discussing a way to broaden that to the nonprofit.
Senator Wieger, any comment?
It could be addressed with an amendment, but in
but
terms
what's
of
the solution,
right? But I. No,
I mean,
we
right
appreciate
now your
sensitivity.
Programs are both non-refundable credits, right. So it's not a matter of writing a check in that sense. If you wanted a level playing field between for-profit and not-for-profit business entities.
Yeah. Dennis Davis, who we heard from, drafted this, and with input from others, and we will follow up with some additional thoughts.
Just a question for you,
Madam Chairman. There's another
caveat. Mr. Kaiser.
Yes, ma'am, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. 2012, a bill was passed in the House and Senate, signed, that gave this a tax credit to unions for hiring veterans, and up to almost $9,000. That program has not been really used as much as something like this, which would include the private sector. And I was just talking with the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs folks, and that particular program has not been as successful as it was purported to be, and this would be an adjunct to that, which would be in the with the unions. This would be for the private sector.
Did the department, sir, did they give any explanation about why the program was not embraced and why obviously it did not work as they had anticipated?
You can certainly talk with the
We may want to hear from them at some point.
Sure. Yep. But that is true. It didn't work the way it was, and they weren't taking advantage of it as it should be.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Sir, we'll move on to you. If you'd identify yourself for the record, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I'm Tom McLaughlin.
Mr. McLaughlin.
I am the State Legislative Chairman for the Veterans of Foreign War. Good morning, committee members. I'm pleased to be here to testify on this bill. One thing, if I may, you commented on other benefits that we may receive as veterans,
yes, sir,
in Minnesota. And I know we have service officers out here who probably can do a better job than I can, but I can tell you my story just real briefly. I was able to take advantage of a jobs program back in the 60s as the federal benefit, as the state federal employer was able to hire me and was able to have part of my salary paid for doing just that. And I was able to find employment shortly after getting out of the service. I do receive a lot of benefits. I receive the tax credit or tax rebate when I buy an automobile. I don't pay any registration fees. I don't pay any sales tax fees. I get a free fishing license for the rest of my life. I take advantage of the homestead tax credit. I get all those wonderful benefits that the normal everyday citizen doesn't get. But these benefits cost me a leg, cost me four bullet holes, caused me to be left behind for dead by the enemy. Now, as a veteran, I'm okay with that because I'm very, very proud of the service I gave for my country. As a senator, Uyghur next to me has a daughter from who served in the military. I have a son who served two combat tours in the Marine Corps in Iraq. He can't be here today to testify because he has the job. He came back from the Marine Corps. He went to Mankato State University. He graduated with honors in 3 years. Went out in the street looking for a job. Couldn't find one. He got on with the Department of Natural Resources as an intern in his last quarter of semester of college. When he graduated, they hired him as summer help. And they said that they would have a position for him in the fall, a full-time position, just what he majored in, just what he wanted to do. 10 days before he was to be hired, he was notified by the area supervisor that they were unable to hire him as a disabled veteran because they got a letter down from the head office in St. Paul that they were short of females in that particular district. So my son was put back out in the street without any future, and I'm not making the point. We do need to have state employment. We do need to have protected classes. Disabled veterans weren't one of them at that time. He couldn't find a job. He almost ended up back in the Army as an officer. Thank God he finally got a job with a nonprofit, and he's working, and that's why he's not here today. So, you know, this dog has a pretty long tail when you think about it. I'm currently a mentor in Veterans Court. I sponsor young veterans in Alcoholics Anonymous. Through my son, I have an association with the Student Veterans Association. So every day I see these veterans who are in school or who may be in trouble who are just looking for a job and they can't find them. The good parts of these bills are that they also benefit the employee. A lot of these students were junior NCOs and enlisted members of the service. And a lot of them tend to end up in technical schools, go to machine skills, machine shops. A lot of your employers are small businesses, many family run, and they would like to expand and hire more people and grow their company. these types of students who've just graduated, it's a tough, tough job field for them to find a job in. And this bill, I think, would benefit not only the veteran as they come out of school, but it also would benefit these small family businesses who are looking for those types of skills.
Thank you very much, Mr. McLaughlin. You tell a very powerful story. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Questions for Mr. McLaughlin? Then we'll proceed. If you'd identify yourself for the committee, we'll have your testimony as well.
Yes, thank you. My name is Joe Johnson with Trust Vets.
Mr. Johnson.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I come today to share the perspective of a civilian. I did not serve the United States Armed Forces, but I have the great privilege through my company to serve its veterans. And I can tell you from personal and professional experience that the vast majority of the veterans that I work with are a remarkable breed of honest, hardworking Americans who want nothing more than the opportunity to continue serving our community here at home as bankers and painters and plumbers and dentists and employees across the state of Minnesota. And yes, it feels good to help veterans, and yes, we owe it to them. We have a civic responsibility to care for our veterans. But I think this specifically is a matter of fiduciary responsibility to our taxpayers. We as taxpayers have invested a tremendous amount of money into each and every one of these individuals. They have been steeped in intense training. They have given through great personal sacrifice of themselves and their family so they could have a better understanding of working in a team environment and a greater respect for chain of command. Veterans have a unique appreciation for getting the job done right the first time and a primal desire to serve the greater good and to do what's in the best interest of the person to their left and to their right and for their community. I think if veterans wish to continue to serve, we'd be fools not to let them. Now, this has come up, this tax incentive, year after year after year, and it's never come to fruition. And I think it's time that we see this through and that we get this done, because if we position veterans for success, it's going to lead to better business for all of us. So there's a lot of reasons to see this through and get this done, but maybe we can take the self-interest approach that it's going to lead to better people in our community, in our businesses, and doing business with ourselves and our families. So I, myself, my company, we are absolutely in support of seeing this through so we can get our veterans back to work so they can continue to serve our communities here at home. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. Any comment? We did not have any amendments to these bills. Is that correct? Senator Nelson, Senator Wieger, we're going to have motions to lay them over. The chair can do it herself, but I prefer to have a motion. Senator Dietzick moves that Senate File 79 be laid over for further consideration for the omnibus tax bill discussion. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Dietzick moves that Senate File 199 be laid over for further consideration for the omnibus tax bill discussion. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed, no. And the motion prevails. Members, I should have, with both sets of bills, asked if there was anyone who wanted to speak in opposition to them, and I'll be reminded to do that in the past, but I'm assuming that there was not. So, but I will come. I will do that from henceforth.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
We're not done with you yet. Yeah. Any further questions for Senator Nelson or Senator Wieger? Senator Skoy, the schedule for the committee for the rest of the week?
There is nothing scheduled for the full committee for this week or next week at this time.
Okay, and for the division, Ms. Schaefer-Pellinen? We have nothing yet scheduled for the division. We are likely to have at least one hearing next week. Senator Nelson.
Just before you adjourn, I just want to thank the chair and the committee for their time today. I know there's a lot on your plate. This is incredibly important.
It is indeed.
Time is now, so thank you very much.
Well, we appreciate your bringing it forward, the two of you.
There's no further business. Senator Eaton moves we adjourn. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion before the committee is adjourned.